This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson,
and joining me are Karina Anglada.
You were ahead of OnlyFans before OnlyFans is what I'm hearing.
And Darius Thomas.
Karina, you are two for two this week in bringing out the weirdness.
Joining us today is Jared Kleinstein from Fresh Tape and Gondola. From memes to vines and now analytics tracking, Jared has failed many times while building valuable products for social media. There are stories, tangents, and deep conversation about work, life, and the pursuit of happiness.
All right. Who wants to call time dot is?
Karina. Your show.
It says my time is exact. So let's do 42. I'm off again. Oh, okay. Every time
it happens, I feel like to the best of us.
Half a second off.
I was just going to say, did Darius go to color bars on everyone else?
I thought
else
that
too?
Was purposeful. I'm like, oh, there's color bars.
Well, you still have...
You don't have the tone, though, so that's disappointing.
I know, right?
Oh, this is way worse. Go back to color bars. Go back to color bars.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited today to have Jared from Fresh Tape and Gondola here with us today. Jared, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us and share your journey to inspire people around the sports creative community.
Awesome. I'm glad to be here. Big fan of everything y'all have done across the board. Your content's great. Your team is awesome. Excited to chat with you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's grown for sure over the last year or so, which is awesome to bring in. And I know in our pre-emails, you had mentioned this, like bringing in other people who are better at something than we are, you know, graphic designers who are developing the look for us that, you know, we can't make as good as what they can make. So with that being said, I'd just love to hear how you got started in the industry and how you eventually evolved to develop into owning Fresh Tape.
For sure. So it was always kind of the dream to be in sports media. In high school, I interned at Fox Sports in Denver. And, you know, in college, I had made a sports TV show for our WashU TV, Woo TV at the time, and, you know, thought that that was the career path I was going to go down. But I was so bad at like applying to jobs and interviewing that I never actually got any jobs right out of school. So anybody who's out there like, oh, what do I need to do out of school? I don't think you need to put that much pressure to get into sports right away if you're thinking that that's your end goal no matter what. So I worked actually for 7 years out of college at a company called Street Easy in New York. It's a real estate website. We got acquired by Zillow in 2013, and it was the best. I had the best time. I made some of my best friends in the world there, learned a lot about tech and a little bit of content at one point because social media was just sort of taking off at the time, but it wasn't really a focus. We didn't have a social media manager or anything like that. And then in 2011, I made up a meme, which was, I don't know if y'all are football fans, but when Tim Tebow was a thing and people were Tebowing, for better or worse, I guess I take responsibility for that. I made up that meme on a random Sunday night in October of 2011. And, you know, took that from being a fun little thing, turned it into a business, learned everything I needed to know about launching an LLC, setting up ad campaigns, everything, setting up a merch store in 2011, like way before merch stores were a thing. You know, that was just a fun thing on the side in addition to my full-time job. So then when I applied to work at Vine after we were acquired, they asked me in the interview process, like, if you could focus on anything, what would you want to do? And I said, sports? And they said, oh, perfect. Ginger doesn't want to do sports. You can do that. So I got the job as head of sports at Vine completely by accident. You know, it's just because Ginger didn't want to focus on that. So Ginger Riker, if you're out there, you're the best. Thank you for letting me do that. So I ran sports partnerships for Vine. I was the only person. There was, you know, I had people on my team, interns and whatnot. But as a part of the Twitter sports ecosystem, I was the Vine guy. So, you know, I don't know if Elon's watching, but I took this. This is one thing I took from the office. It may have cost you $4. I'm sorry. Well, it didn't cost you. It cost the company $4 back then. So I was in charge of all of our relationships, all the sports leagues, teams, broadcasters in the world, where Twitter had a North America team, a Europe team, EMEA. I was the only Vine guy. So I built these awesome relationships. And then on October 27th, 2016, I don't know why I remember that date specifically. Vine shut down, or they announced it to us that we were all going to get laid off. And I had to figure out what to do with my life. And there are some people that are, they are entrepreneurs. They want to start a business, and that is what they want to do. They'll never work for the man. And that really isn't me. Like, I've started these businesses kind of because people have told me that they would work with me in different capacities. So I didn't know what to do. And a few people at Twitter said, you should start your own thing. I said, I didn't want to. I didn't want to be a consultant. And they said, then start an agency. And I said, I never worked in an agency. How do you do that? They said, listen, we don't know the answers to your questions, but talk to our clients, see if they'd still work with you. So that fall, I made some calls, called Major League Soccer, called the NBA, and said, hey, would you do anything with me in any kind of context? And I think I had been talking with you all about this in email. I don't have any like creative marketing, like content skills. Like, I'm a bad editor, a bad photographer. I should not be behind the camera. Or I definitely should be behind it, but like really far behind it. I decided, per a few clients saying, yeah, we'd work with you, that I should start Fresh Tape Media, which is a creative production company based here in Denver. And that was the journey that got us there in 2017. We've been kicking it ever since. It went from me in the back of my house with, you know, a couple employees in the back of my house after a year. And that was a fun experience when my wife would like get out of the shower and be like, hello, Max, good to see you. And then expanded to a small office here in Denver on 7th and Calumet in the Santa Fe Arts District of Denver, and expanded to another office. And now we have an office campus that we own where we have a studio building, a co-working space, and an office space. So it's been a blast.
It's awesome to hear, you know, Justin and I are in similar situations where we do it full-time freelance. I don't know if I will ever want to expand as big. Kind of talk about the steps into growing from a back room at your house as an office to now an office space in Denver.
For sure. So it was driven from the beginning for a sense of like just intrinsic FOMO and need to be with people. And I think that the co-working spaces of the world have been trying to convince us for years that you can be like create community in a space with tangential people. But I always wanted to work with people. My favorite jobs were based on not just the work I did every day, but being around people that I like created real friendships and relationships with. So I knew that I wanted to have employees eventually. And it happened pretty naturally. It happened through a combination of, I started it based on just outsourcing individual projects to people I built relationships with in the Vine days. I already knew videographers, I knew editors. And because when I was at Vine, it's not that they the NBA and the NFL and NHL wanted to work with influencers, they wanted to work with creatives because, you know, the Logan Pauls and the Vine stars of the world maybe weren't brand safe. So it was more in their interest to work with editors and cool graphic designers. So I'd already built that network a little bit. So I started, you know, getting projects. I had this policy of say yes to everything and figure out how to do it. So if somebody said, can you film this? I would say yes. And then I'd figure out who could film it. If somebody said, can you do that VFX package? I'd say yes. And I'd figure out somebody who could. As a result, I was always relying on really talented people that weren't me. And then eventually it became a, who am I outsourcing a lot to? And I found our creative director, Max, who I had been working with since 2015. And, you know, when I found out he was interviewing at ESPN, he texted me and said, hey, would you have a job if I moved to Denver? And I said, yes. And then when I needed somebody to run social channels for a client, Alana was an option who, I'm pointing at her like she's over here. She's in Chicago right now. She came in to do some freelance, and then eventually we just loved working together. And it all just happened slowly but surely, as in I had a need. We were doing too many shoots. We need another shooter. Let's bring in Avalon. We are doing too many projects. We need an operations person. Let's bring in Gabby. It all just happened like without a business plan. Everybody thinks you need to write like formal business plans with budgeting for the future. I've never written a business plan in my life other than in college. It's all just happened organically.
I like that you said that, because going back to what you said before, how everybody wants to be an entrepreneur and nobody wants to work for the man and all of that. And you also said that you weren't the talented videographer or editor. And people think that, oh, in order for me to start something, I have to be talented in the creative space. Talk about the advantage that you have as more of an executive creative as opposed to an actual physical creative who's doing all of the things with their hands.
For sure. I think the biggest advantage with that role, there's a couple. One is it's very easy for people that are really talented creatives to see an opportunity and say, you know what, I'll just shoot that instead of outsourcing to a videographer or outsourcing to a DP, because, I mean, they're not going to find any better than me. And then you can't scale because you're only one person. You can't do that many things at once, right? Like in one week, in like this week, to be able to do NFL draft and do a Team USA shoot and work on a few of our retainer clients at the same time, I couldn't do it all. So knowing that limitation meant that I was always thinking about outsourcing. The other advantage to it is that I came from a background where I knew that relationships mattered first. And the reason that was really crucial to realize in our industry is, like Darius, Justin, Karina, you all have access to the same tools I have, right? You have the same cameras, same editing tools. We're all in Premiere and After Effects. Karina, shout out. Hey. We're all in, you know, using the same products. We're all using the same products every day. I cannot say that Fresh Tape Media has, or the even the Gondola engineers have access to any products that none of that y'all don't have access to. So to say that I can create something that you can't is really hard, especially nowadays. I don't know if y'all noticed the last 4 or 5 years, content has been pretty stagnant. Like, we haven't really evolved the kinds of things we're capturing and creating outside of like FPV drones, right? So I can't say we're any better or different than any of our competitors in terms of what we can create and how we do it. What I can say is the way we'll treat our clients will be different. The way we treat the talent on set will be different. The creative approach, the output, that's our focus. And I knew that relationships would matter first because, you know, that's what I like doing best. So all of our, you know, our top five clients, we've been working with for 7 years, right? It's pretty crazy to think that we don't, our turnover is pretty limited because of just the relationships we've forged.
That's amazing. A lot of things that I'm thinking about there are beyond, you know, what you said about relationships matter. I think a lot of times we only look at it in terms of networking, but in what you just said, it's beyond that. It's behavior on set, behavior day to day. Where did that stem from for you? And because I feel like a lot of times in sports, we kind of like, whether we realize it or not, the culture is to kind of stay in our own lane and to, you know, take all the credit and do all these things on our own, like you said, right? Like I might be one videographer. Like, where did that kind of mentality come from? Because I feel like it's refreshing. It's not usual all the time in this industry.
Well, there's two places that came from. One is like an old school mentality of that is not okay to say in 2023. So I apologize if I'm offending anybody. But if you treat your clients like friends, your team like family, and your office like home, then all three will be more enjoyable. And I know those are like kind of like, you can't call your workplace a family. It's really a bit iffy to say nowadays. And if you create friendships with your clients, does that blur the lines? I've found that policy has made work that much more enjoyable. But where did I get it from? With my dad. So, and my mom is the same way, but like, I'll never forget. I was at a Yankees game in 2016 with, Catherine Buckles, Hallie Stark, and, Andrew Patterson from the MLB. And I think, Arturo was there too. So these are like OG and MLB social people. And I'm at the game. And we spent 3 hours or however long games took before we made the pitch clock changes, talking about baseball. And we talked about like the history of the Rockies, some of our favorite players growing up. And I called my dad after and I was like, Dad, you don't believe it. You won't believe it. Like, I just talked about baseball for hours, and that was considered work, and that was relationship building, and that was great. And I didn't learn that in school. I learned that from you. Like, I learned from you a love for sports, a love for connecting with people about them, using it as a unifier, and then like creating friendships out of it. And my dad's like, well, don't say that school wasn't worth it, because that was really expensive, right? And it seems like you spent a lot of time on that. I was like, yeah, no, school was good. But like the treating everybody the same way was definitely my dad. My dad would go, he pretty much lived in the Pepsi Center, which is now Ball Arena. He was at games every day. And the people that ran the parking lots were his best friends. The people that handed out programs were his best friends. The executives that walked around the suites were his best friends. He believed that you should treat everybody the same, and that you shouldn't just see them as like a network, but like friends, the people you care about. And it impacts also like how you deliver content to people, because you don't want to disappoint them. Like, I don't want to disappoint our clients because of how our personal relationships are, not because of a financial agreement. So that's kind of my take.
I love that. That's awesome.
I like that you say that about treating everybody the same, and, you know, not just from a respect standpoint, but also just getting to know the roles of everyone helps make your life better, helps make theirs. And those people that your dad found as best friends, you know, they're people at the end of the day. And so, you know, we have this kind of toxic positivity that goes around Twitter and, you know, social space now, but it's all, no one ever talks about the root, right? It's like, just treat people well. People should treat you well. And, you know, it goes back to the golden rule, treat people how you want to be treated. But, you know, that's hard for some people.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that rule? I thought that that was the golden rule. I thought that was it. I thought that was peak. And then I went to a therapist a few years ago who told me about the platinum rule. Do you know the platinum rule?
Educate us.
I don't.
The platinum, the golden rule is treat people how you want to be treated. The platinum rule is treat people how they want to be treated. So that is really important in the workplace, because we're all different. You know, I may be an ENFP, and Emma may be an INFJ, and I may be an Enneagram 3, and Dylan may be an Enneagram 7. And if you treat everybody how you think you, I'm not saying this like we build our lives around Enneagrams. Only slightly.
That would be so cool if you did.
Yeah. We've done the tests. We've done the like personality test in the office. But like, Emma, what are you? INFJ, what's your Enneagram? She's a 1. We couldn't be more different. I'm an ENFP. I guess we both have NFs. That's cool. But and Emma and I are like homies. She runs our ops. She's wonderful. She can't
all the letters.
Five, but she's too far away. yeah, the point is, if you treat all your employees the way you want to be treated, then you risk alienating them or offending them. Some people want direct feedback. Some people want compliment sandwiches. I love the platinum rule because it shifts the mentality.
And how do you get there? Like, how do you, like, obviously you're in a different, you're in a different space as a, you know, startup / small business owner, right? Mm-hmm. But for a lot of the people who are in this industry, they work for an NFL team, an NBA team, or a college. Like, how do we kind of breathe that platinum rule into the day-to-day workings of how we work together and find success together?
Feedback is the first one. And I think that people need to stop approaching feedback linearly, like managers give feedback to their direct reports and direct reports don't go the other way. Like, if you work for, if you're a videographer for the Denver Nuggets.
All the snaps.
I mean, that's like the whole point of this 360 review stuff that all these big companies want you to do. And you can call them annoying and like they take too long to do 360 reviews, but you should, as a manager, know how your people feel about your work. And you should get like, feel like if you, like as a videographer for the Nuggets, let's say Austin Carrier, one of my favorite human beings in the industry. If he's reporting into Hallie and Hallie puts together a campaign that just crushes and she's coordinating a bunch of things. Like, Austin is not just a worker bee, you know? He can go to her and say, Hallie, that's awesome. I really appreciate it. Like, I think this is a really cool campaign. I'm excited that we're working on this together. Managers appreciate that. And as a manager, like, I don't want to always be telling everybody how great they are. I want some people to just be like, you know, this is a cool strategy we're taking. It feels nice.
Yeah, I wish more people would adopt that 100%. I think what you mentioned before about the family you know, calling work a family. When I hear that and think about that, I think of more of like a top-down structure. And what you just mentioned, inverts that a little bit. And I think that's what breaks down that it's a family, that there could be conversations going up and down, sideways. So I would love for a lot of people to take that into account when they're doing, you know, their reviews and all that kind of stuff, because it's not just you and your boss. Because if you have a boss that doesn't like you, like I did, you're just screwed. So if you have other teammates or people that report up to you who are giving feedback, there's more of a holistic point of view on your work. And it's not just one person saying, you need to do X, Y, and Z better. And it turns into all negative. So I love that perspective.
It's funny thinking about the family metaphor and how the family dynamics in the world have changed. And it's not just like, you know, we tell a story that's hilarious. My dad we're having dinner in fourth grade, and my sister and I were doing the dishes. We said, "Dad, why don't you do the dishes?" And he was like on his phone, or not his phone, he was like working at the time. And he looks at us and goes, "Who makes the money in this household?" And we died laughing. He was saying it like he said it one time, and he was saying it as a knee-jerk reaction to like us trying to convince him to do the dishes. We gave him shit. Pardon my friend. I'm sorry. We made fun of him every dinner for the rest of our lives. We said, "Dad, oh, sorry. We thought we're going to have you do the dishes. We know you make the money in this household." Eventually he didn't. But like the dynamics have changed where it's not this like completely pyramid type top heavy thing. I am like, when I look at my mom and my relationship with her, her professional success is something I'm so proud of. She's a real estate agent. And when she makes a deal or she treats somebody well, I'm proud of her. And that kind of thing can translate to the workplace. You can see the people that you admire and that inspire you, and you can be proud of them the same way you'd be proud of your mom for doing something wonderful.
To kind of piggyback off of that, is it's also the mind shift of working for someone as opposed to working with someone. Because when you work with someone, like you feel like you're in it together, right? At least I did when I worked with certain people. But, you know, you have a lot of people who will say, "Oh, well, you work for me." It's like, I work with you, but it's not top down. It's like, because if I'm not successful, you're not successful. So talk about how you kind of go into that day to day, because it feels like the way that you talk about your staff is like you work with your staff. Right. They don't work for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially as a solo owner with like no investors, in the Fresh Tape side of things. We've had to build different systems to really show people that they're valued, but also that they gain from the company's growth. So not just, you know, the fact that we have multiple employees who've started, you know, pretty like reasonable starting salaries when they came out of school or when they were younger, that now are making six figures and are really doing awesome work. But also we have a commission structure that is not based on sales people only. So if you are a graphic designer and somebody comes to you for a freelance gig, we have a structure to incentivize you to bring that into the company as a sales deal. So you get commission on that.
My jaw is on the floor right now because this is like amazing, but continue. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, it's complicated. I'll tell you, it is nuanced. We've gone through so many iterations of it that like have failed or frustrated people where it's like, wait, but this person wanted me as a wedding videographer and Fresh Tape doesn't do weddings, right? Or, hey, this is a massive deal and we did really well on it. Shouldn't I make more than if I brought in a $2,000 deal by percentage, right? So like we've iterated on it, but having a commission structure so that people feel like it doesn't matter who you are, but you can be empowered to help the bottom line of the company is great. We also do pretty open and transparent conversations about revenue and costs. So in our monthly review, there's no secrets. There's no intern that doesn't know, you know, what our total company revenue is on the month and where we're at and how we're tracking and how our P&L looks. So that transparency definitely helps people to feel like they're a part of something.
Where did the name Fresh Tape come from?
I had some really bad names that were in mind and I made websites for them. And then I was playing hockey on New Year's Day 2017 with my family. And I said to somebody, like I don't know, my sister or somebody. I was like, is there any better feeling than fresh tape on a stick? And I was like, oh my God, tape, videotape, stickiness, content. This is it. Figured out that I could get the website, sent a Google form around to my friends to make sure it wasn't the right choice. And then went from there. And then Gondola came up as a name because, and I don't know if y'all know, Gondola was an internal tool of Freshtape. It was an accident. We built Freshtape Admin, and then it evolved to be what Gondola is today. And that name came up because we were also looking at like a word association thing with Freshtape and the mountains in Colorado. And I think it was like on a gondola skiing. And I was like, wait a second, this works, because like a gondola, anybody can take a gondola to the top on their own. Like anybody can go solo, but it's way more fun to be in a gondola with a group. So it was that like team mentality that kind of came into it. That sort of tells that story. I realize that we're now 30 minutes in and we haven't said a thing about Gondola. So I'm doing a terrible job marketing. I'm so sorry. Make sure that the header, the title of this is just Gondola. Is Gondola Gondola? Gondola. So that everybody knows that that's
a thing. It's completely fine. We have the time if you do.
I got nowhere to be. I've got the beads watching over me.
Oh, I didn't realize that was Justin Bieber behind you. I was wondering.
I was born in Toronto, so I need a Canadian creative always looking after me. And I used to have a basketball net up there, so it looked like he was shooting, but it kind of fell off the wall. So here we are.
I love all of this because, you know, my favorite thing to say is, you know, inspiration comes from everywhere and anywhere. And it seems like you really take that onus and, right, you got inspiration from a hockey stick. You got inspiration from being in a place that you love, doing something that you love. What is your general take on inspiration? And because it seems like you just, I don't know, as you're describing everything, you're like, oh, this idea, connected to that idea, connected to this idea. And I feel like a lot of creatives, like you said, you know, we feel like we need a business plan, or we feel like we need a complete storyboard before we get started on a project. And, you know, for me, one of the phrases I like to tell myself whenever I have that imposter syndrome is just like, you know, from an editing standpoint, put ish on the timeline, just put something, anything, throw it on the timeline. So I'm curious your take on that, because it sounds like you've got that mentality that inspiration comes from anywhere and everywhere, but you also take it and run with it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it started when I was, when I was 12 or 13 and my best friend Jules was like, have you ever anybody watched Boy Meets World?
Of course. Corey and Topanga.
I was Corey. He was Sean. Jules is a hunk. He's still my best friend. He's like in Boulder right now, but we see each other every week. I thought that being funny was the only way I'd get girls. And this is a weird tangent, but like you learn if you're like trying to be the Corey that you throw a lot at the wall and you don't get your Topangas every time. Although they seem to be together for a really long time. So anyway, I digress. I learned how many bad ideas I had to have to figure out my good ones. And you have to also have bad ideas to teach you structure. So when T-Bowing started, I'd already had Tumblrs that I had started. I already knew how to set up Google AdWords campaigns, and I know how to set up banner campaigns. I knew how social platforms work because I'd had bad ideas. I had an idea called didthecubswintonight.com, which was just a website where you'd figure out if the Cubs won. Because my friends were from Chicago and I wanted to make fun of how often they were losing. Wait,
I feel like I remember this.
You don't. I promise other people make way better versions.
I was going to say.
I had so many bad ideas. I had this idea of sad vacation feet. I was so frustrated that my friends were posting videos or photos of their like feet on beaches back in 2010. I was really frustrated by that.
You were ahead of OnlyFans before OnlyFans
I took these feet pictures and I would Photoshop like dead whales in the background and cemeteries. I was just like, but every one of these ideas is like, oh, isn't this ridiculous? But I was so used to having 9 bad ideas for every 1 good one, and that's okay. You just have to be like, those 9 teach you about structure. So that's like one aspect of it. And then the other thing for inspiration is that something in a Freakonomics podcast I listened to 3 years ago said it perfectly, which is like the definition of creativity. And creativity is the balance of, or as it said in this podcast, it was like, it's the balance of familiarity and novelty. And nothing is creative if it's too much novelty or too familiar. So I'll give you an example. What's your favorite TV show? One of you. Justin, favorite TV show?
I don't watch TV. My wife was watching Naked and Afraid, though. That might be a good one.
Okay. So if you took the Naked, if you worked for the Minnesota Vikings, to create an example, and you took the Naked and Afraid intro, right, and you just published it, that's familiarity. Everybody knows the Naked and Afraid intro. It's not creative. If you took a like Vikings, or you did a mushroom edit and you published something that was just like a shroomy, just there's just crazy stuff all over, that'd be too novel. That has nothing familiar. You'd be like, why would the Vikings publish this? But if the Vikings published a Naked and Afraid mushroom edit with Vikings logos, people would be like, what? I know Naked and Afraid. This is different. And they may not hit, but it's creative because it combines the two. Or like when somebody does a Full House theme remix with their team's roster. Like that is an example where it's not too familiar. It's not too novel. It's like the balance of those two. So I'm always sort of seeking inspiration of those things. And if our competitors do cool shit, I am always on the ball with that. Not because I'm trying to rip it, but because I'm inspired by it.
I love that. Love it a lot. Karina, you are 2 for 2 this week in bringing out the weirdness. Let's just point that out.
Hey, that's what I'm here for. I'm curious about OnlyFans. Please don't put that in.
We're getting Karina, terrible. Keep it in for this reason. This is why it needs to stay. This is why OnlyFans needs to stay.
Only if we can get a sponsorship.
This will make sense. The coolest thing that's happening in our across this creative industries, it doesn't matter what creative industry you're talking about, is the empowerment of everyday creators. The fact that, sure, there's been a democratization where a videographer behind the scenes can become a brand on their own. And if they never become a brand, they can still be empowered using a service like Gondola to be recognized for that impact of their work. And like, I'm not saying I have ever contributed or used OnlyFans before. But I haven't actually. I said that like mysteriously, like I have. No, I haven't. I haven't used it. Like, no, I'm not. You're not going to find
wink,
that.
Wink.
You aren't going to find these 10 and a halfs on OnlyFans. It is people that thought they would never make money doing something are now able to do so. Think about just our industry and all the people that are now getting recognized for their work because of this democratization. It's really wonderful. We're treating the people behind the camera and the people behind the editing computers as more than hired help. They're being treated like impactful team members and a part of like this whole creative industry. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling in the world, to feel like you're just a set of hands doing something for somebody else because you have the skills and your hands to do it.
Right.
Yep. Do you know what's really interesting about that though? It's there is a balance where there is a cool feeling to be behind the scenes and nobody realizes it's you until like later. Yep. So my professional hero is a guy named Max Martin. Do y'all know who Max Martin is?
No.
Oh.
Max Martin has written more number one Billboard hits than anybody other than Paul McCartney and John Lennon. He has written every Backstreet Boys hit, a lot of Taylor Swift's hits. He's been doing it since the 90s. He kills it. Nobody realizes it's him. If you're in the music industry, he's a legend. He goes to any concert he wants, probably can go wherever he wants to do. But he like is in the grocery store and he's like, oh, I wrote that. Oh yeah, I wrote that one. Nobody's bothering him, right? So there's something about being like behind it, and as long as people recognize you and the people you care about recognize your impact, I think that fulfillment is really special.
Yeah, we could talk about that one all day, because I think no one really recognizes that balance is key in a lot of this. Mm-hmm. I think we're, as creatives, selfishly sometimes we're like, oh well, I just want the credit so that people know who I am. But I've always been the type that I would rather people not know who I am, as long as I'm good with me. I didn't need it from anyone else. But I also know that when people recognize your work, that also, you know, there's a special tug to your heart, but you don't want the attention.
There's an interesting balance where we are in the world too, on social. So before Gondola came around, it seemed to be two types of people when it comes to credit on social. There is the, humbled to create this amazing piece of content for the Chicago Bears, right? To be honest, when I see that tweet, even though I tweeted myself, I never like that stuff. Like, it's fine. Good for them. It's pseudo humble braggy, and it feels safe. It feels like the right thing to do for our clients. Mm-hmm. Then there's the, yo, check out this fire I created, right? And let's be super...
Not the snort, fire.
But like the three fire emojis, like, look what I made.
Hate.
And I hate to say it, yeah. That stuff gets more engagement, right? If you tweet, I created this fire, you're going to get more likes than if you said, oh, like, so humbled to make this for Adobe. And we do look at the numbers. We do get validation from the likes on that stuff. So there hasn't been a good way until Gondola came around to say what you did in a matter of fact way that wasn't either a humble brag or a me, without pissing off somebody.
I'm going to be pissed anyway, but you bring it up. So let's talk about Gondola. Some people understand the platform to a T. Some people like myself who are kind of removed from a lot of the industry stuff in sports now don't really get it. Kind of give us a soft or extensive answer to what the Gondola platform is and why people should mm-hmm. be using it.
For sure. So Gondola is a place where creators can take credit for their work and build portfolios from that and track their own analytics, regardless of where the piece of content was published. So if you made a piece of content that goes out on the Nebraska Huskers football account one day and you make something on the Chicago Bears the next, I'm sorry, Jess, I'm just seeing the guy. I really hope that's a Nebraska helmet. Otherwise, I'm embarrassing
it
myself.
It definitely is.
Pratt Husker.
Okay. So if you have content on each of those, nobody knows it's you necessarily, unless you're like an influencer where you requested credit. We've built a system where creators can take credit for that, add that content to their portfolios, and track the analytics at the same time. So you can actually, you know, determine the value of your work in a quantifiable way. I mean, as much as I love our industry, it's kind of backwards in time in terms of how we judge the success of our employees. If you think about somebody who works in BD or sales, they're going to get judged on revenue. They're going to get judged on, you know, conversions, etc. But if you work in social content, it's been pretty subjective. It's like, did our company in general do well on social, and did your content look good subjectively? And we build a system where creators can say, "Hey, I'm responsible for 40 million views for our team. I'm responsible for 50 posts that went, you know, over 100,000 views." And those people don't need to be influencers. They're the day-to-day people that deserve credit for their work. So what we've done is we built a system that is what started as IMDb for social, in that we built a crediting tool for creators, has really evolved to being a wonderful creator marketplace and hiring tool. So if you add your credits, you get shown in the creator search based on, you know, if you said you were a videographer on these Nuggets posts, then you'll show up as a videographer in Denver. And as a result, we've built this platform that has really evolved to more of like a LinkedIn for the creative community, where you're building your portfolio and it's a visual resume. It tells people, like, instead of on paper saying, I worked in social for the 49ers, it shows what you've made for them. And then from there, they can find you in terms of trying to hire you for opportunities, and you use it for a million different things. So that's the basics. And it was all an accident. You know, we built it as an internal tool at Freshtape just because we wanted to track our own work. And then we added who on our team worked on what. And we were like, wait a second. If you can paste a link from Instagram and see who made this video, then we've accidentally created the first crediting system for social. So maybe we should let other people use it. And that has been this fun evolution to where we are today.
And analytics are becoming a very vital part, even like some people are using analytics, but not really using analytics. Talk about the importance of being able to do that internally, not necessarily to get more gigs and all of that. Mm-hmm. Why is a platform like why should more companies and institutions be using something like this?
For sure. So it all starts from something I experienced at Vine. First call that a guy named Kevin Estevez at the MBA made to me, who's still there. He said, hey, can you tell me about our loops? Like, there's no analytics. I want to know the success of it. And because you can hear every article say, we need to be using TikTok more, we need to be using Vine more. Until you see the numbers, it's hard to justify your investment. And as a production company or a freelancer, you can say all you want that your creative is good and that your content, your output is good, but you want to deliver results. So being able to cite the analytics as a results-driven way to judge people's performance and to judge your team's performance is key, especially as budgets get tighter. Like, we thought there'd be a bigger slowdown in 2023 in terms of the amount of people we're spending on social and stuff. And it's been a little more gradual than we thought, but, you know, there's a lot of economic turmoil out there. And if budgets get cut, people want to see results, and social analytics and conversion to revenue is key. So, you know, I think it's pretty exciting in the times we're at, because now that data is available. And Gondola, the one thing we're really, really proud of is that there are a lot of competitors in social analytics. I don't want to deny that, right? Y'all probably have used Sprout or Sprinklr or Amplify or one of those awesome tools. And they're all pulling from similar places, right? They all have access to the APIs and social data. Gondola's level of data on who the creators were behind the content isn't available anywhere else, right? It's contributed to Gondola. So there's nowhere else you could find out that Karina made this post, right? There's nowhere else you could find out that Justin made this one or that Darius did this one. Sorry, I was about to stick with just Karina and Justin, and I was like, shoot, I can't do two of three.
No, so please do two of the system
three. That data. So like yesterday we hit 500,000 posts with credits, and that's a lot of data points that no other platform has. We're really proud of that.
One of the questions that I have is, I see somebody make a post and, hey, my video hit over 1 million views for the first time, right? And then you look at the video and it's got a couple celebrities in there. Like, by the fact that they're celebrities on their own that generated quite a few of the views already, I'm just curious, are there ways in which people are not necessarily riding the wave of the types of content that they're producing? Just because a video blew up doesn't mean that you got better as a creator, right? Is there a way that you're evaluating all of that?
For sure. So we haven't released anything yet. We've talked at all about a lot about the need for engagement rates based on following, so you can see the difference in whether something popped based on the channel's following, based on the content, stuff like that. So we've talked about that because it's really important for people not to just think the only way to get a ton of views is if you work for a big organization, right? Or if there's paid spend behind the content, which can have a big impact on the stats. But beyond that, the thing that we're really excited about with what Gondola's doing is the ability to see content and judge it before judging the person just based on their resume. So I think Jason Levine from the Chargers said this. He is a G. And I don't know if y'all have already interviewed him, but like as plugged into the creative community as any other executive in the digital world is. He said something on the lines of like, it's not always about making content for views. It's about sometimes making content for the industry. It's an indicator. So like yesterday, I don't know if y'all saw they put out the hype video.
Yeah, the hype video is awesome.
So I don't know if that's going to get 1 million views. They've had some things like their anime posts from last year for schedule release crushed. And this one is a bit more inside baseball, right? Like, we get it. And as long as an organization, you're balancing a combination of like, okay, we need to use our social to grow for the market. But if people see this video and they want to work for the Chargers more because it's an indicator of what it looks like to be a creative on that team, then that's another great like KPI for them to go after. It's like when they look at how many applicants apply for a job as a videographer there because they think it's cool to be a videographer for the Chargers, that is something that matters. So I think that as industry professionals, putting pressure on ourselves to always make viral hits isn't as always the number one key, right? Sometimes it's about what it means for the industry, what it means for potential hires, et cetera.
I love this because I think, you know, as a woman and listening to this conversation, especially someone who grew up in a Latino household where I was kind of like told, like, don't brag ever. Don't, you know, you want to have confidence, but you don't want to be cocky. I feel like Gondola helps to kind of say, here's my work. And kind of is evolving what I think used to be, you know, where we put our demo reels on Vimeo, but kind of taking it a step further. So it's amazing. And I think you even said it, right? Like, it's a balancing act. It seems like it's a delicate dance, right? Depends on who you work for, who's your manager, like we've talked about, mm-hmm. like what kind of environment, what PR team, you know, what kind of PR team you have in your organization. But I love that in a way, you know, you're democratizing and creating a space for creators to, you know, share their work in a safe way. But I do think it is a delicate dance of, like, at least for me, where I'm like, I feel a little bit old school. I'm like, I don't want to promote my work still, even though,
yeah,
knowing that if you do promote your work as a creative, that can open the door for opportunities down the road.
100%. And the interesting thing about how some people use Gondola now, there's no right way to use it. It's like eating a Reese's. But the way that we use it at Fresh Tape is something that I really want to recommend to people, which is, it is our content management tool too. It is not just about flexing. It's not about the stats only. When somebody says to me, we're working on NFL draft, or Gabby says yesterday, she's like talking about drafts. She's like, I think we should consider like a Wheel of Fortune wheel. And I go, oh, 2018 NFL draft. And I can pull up our content from 2018's NFL draft in as many seconds as it takes to type in the word NFL draft in the search bar on Gondola. And that level of content management, like, otherwise, what are we doing? We're going into Google Drive, going into Dropbox, going into old emails. And then the other thing that you brought up about the demo reels and Vimeo, all of us should care more about the legalese in our client contracts and in our employer contracts. And if you work for a company as work for hire, you may not have the right to own that footage to publish it openly. And if they tell you after you get 600,000 views on your Vimeo demo reel, like, take it down, you have to. It's not your footage, right? And if you use the wrong song, you have to take it down. Gondola is built on embeds. We are built on the fact that if you hit play on Gondola, that adds to the original publisher's piece of content. And it's all rooted in my fear of pissing anybody off. Like, most startups have like somebody that's like Uber. We want to disrupt taxis, right? I'm not trying to disrupt anybody. There's nobody I'm trying to like upset. I'm just trying to make things better for the industry.
I'm, you know, my head is spinning a little bit because I'm thinking about ownership, right? And who owns, right? Ultimately, the teams or the organization that you work for, they own it. But then there's like that response of like, well, if I wasn't an editor and put these clips together in this order with this music, with this, right, then it wouldn't have, right? So for me, I'm not even asking a question. I'm just thinking about this concept of ownership in the creative space and who gets to say, you know, who owns what piece. But what I love about everything that we're talking about is essentially what you see in credits at the end of a film, right? You see how many people worked on it, how many visual effects artists were there, you know, on the film for Avatar. And I think that's what I personally love about the future of the industry and where we're going, because it takes so many people to build the content that we're creating. So I don't even have a question. I'm just kind of talking, but
I love it. Darius, what were you going to say? So I can respond to that, but I want to hear your thoughts.
That's kind of where I was going, but also just the strategy behind not pissing people off, just to make everything better for everyone else, right? Like, a lot of times it's, how can I get the ownership of this space? Like, it's not to disrupt what Vimeo has or disrupt what YouTube has or disrupt what Behance has. It's, how can I take what all of them do, put it in one place, and also expand what we're capable of doing? So how did that become like the thing to like, that's an interesting strategy to go with, per se.
Yeah. I mean, it happened because it was never intended, the way it was built was intended to be for personal use and for our company's use to like make our lives better, not thinking about other people other than being able to report data to our clients. So coming from that lens of not trying to disrupt, trying to just aid a process, really helped shape that. Also, being sensitive to the fact that Fresh Tape as a production company. So they're two separate entities now, right? So Gondola and Fresh Tape are spun off. Fresh Tape people will work on Gondola things as like consultants, but two separate entities. But as a result, they still know me, and I can't piss off the NFL on Gondola side because they're my client on the Fresh Tape side. So I'm like super scared of doing anything wrong because it could completely sabotage our other business. So that's kind of like where it comes from. Is I just a fear of disappointing somebody. And also like I can't have, let's say Gondola had this amazing idea and we were going to let you rip all of the NFL's content and turn it into a reel that you could use, right? And that would make us millions. I could sell it. I'm on yachts tomorrow. I'm not really into yachts, but conceptually I'm on a yacht. if 13 people at Fresh Tape lost jobs because the NFL said, hey, the guy that runs your company just did this thing ripping all our footage. Like that, I can't do that. And the one thing we didn't talk about with employees earlier is like, if you say Darius and Justin, like, you know, we want to grow this and why should we ever have employees? Knowing that your work is giving people opportunities to buy their first homes, to, you know, have not just like food on their tables, but like good quality of life. They get to go on vacations because not just because they have a PTO policy, but because they can afford to. Like that sense of fulfillment is one of my favorite parts about being an employer. It's like, it's not just about we need their services. It's like, holy shit, when Gabby sent me a message saying, can you send this thing to our potential, to our mortgage broker to verify my employment? Like, yeah, that matters. Like our job gave somebody the opportunity to move into her first home with her husband. And that's like the coolest thing. Like, total attention.
I love that.
Sorry, that was off the rails.
No, that was a good response to the question because it does go to show that it's more about the people around you than just your personal growth and gain. And you know, in a society today, we don't necessarily go after things that aren't just benefiting for ourselves. It's more so,
yeah,
you know, I want it all and I want it right now and I don't care who's in the way. I want them out of the way kind of thing. But go ahead, Corinne.
Yeah. And on that note, Jared, I'm curious, what have you been most proud of? Because it seems like you've accomplished a lot throughout your career. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking like if you were on Gondola, like what would be front and center when you think about the biggest accomplishment thus far?
It's so cheesy to say it's not about my own accomplishments because it's all about like the team. Like my favorite story, which doesn't really show up in the content on Gondola, is like the 2019 NFL draft. We built this Plinko board and you drop a chip and see what team you're going to get drafted by. And I'll admit, in post, we were cutting the bottom, like we were like doing a quick edit so that they happened to land on the team. But we had the raw footage of what team they dropped on. And multiple players in the top 10 happened to actually hit their team, like coincidentally, like the chances were so slim. And we're in this bar in Nashville. And like, I'm happy the stats did well. I'm happy the content performed. I'm happy it gets used everywhere. We're in this bar in Nashville and the draft is over. It's raining. We're looking up at the TV and SportsCenter's on it. They're showing our clip. And it was like, you won't believe what happened because even like, I'm proud of it and I didn't even cause it. We just created a system. Something happened. But just like being with a group of people, all of us cheersing and giving each other high fives and hugging and saying that is a coolest feeling. It was this great embodiment of why you do things as a team. What can happen that you can't control that can still make things wonderful. As long as like you set things up for yourself so that, you know, content worked, the content was great. No matter what, it was going to be considered a success, but that was just the coolest gravy. And I don't even like, I don't know if that's the top of my Gondola page. My Gondola page is, just a fun, you know, throwback machine for me.
That's awesome. So as we know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And as a business owner and operator, solopreneur, however you identify in these times, you know, it's easy to focus on the great and the good, right? How are you as a company owner? Mm-hmm. Approaching mental health for yourself as well as your staff?
For sure. I suck at it for myself. I can tell you things I'm working on because I think that I am a work in progress. A lot of us are. I have terrible sleep. I sleep like 5 hours a night, and I wake up not like anxious about work, but just more like, I get to do this. Oh, I have to check this, send this email, whatever. So I really recommend sleep to everybody because I don't get it. My brain is all over the place because of some weird combination of lack of sleep and ADD, not diagnosed, but just like, if you know me, you think my brain's in a million places. And it's hard. It's really hard to take care of yourself. I've always thought of life as this triangle where it is not an ordered triangle. It's just like, there's three pillars. One is taking care of yourself. One is taking care of your people and your work. And one is taking care of your family and friends. And especially me, I'm a dad. I've got a 2-year-old baby. Her name is Ava. And I also have my puppy right here, the cheese monster, Manchego. He's somewhere in the office here. It's really hard to do all three. I would say it's almost impossible to succeed. So the thing that always gets lost is taking care of myself. Like, look at these. You can't see it because the guy did a good job with the beard, but like, there's a lot of roles under here that I wish didn't exist because I'm like, I gained weight when I became a dad. Like, I suck at working out. I'm trying to work on it. I'm a work in progress. It was on the personal level. I got like a trainer named Nick. He's the man. We talk about sports and we lift things. That's cool. But then as far as the team, I think that we have some really big systemic problems in our industry in terms of the fact that videographers, creators are expected to work sports hours and 9 to 5. Like, you're expected to work a game and 9 to 5. And the teams that seem to be most successful are the ones that are right now doing a better job of trying to formalize things so that there's balance. So our system that we have at Fresh Tape is we have 3 days a week in the office, Tuesday through Thursday. Monday and Friday, people can work from home or anywhere. We have 4 weeks of remote per year, so you can work literally anywhere as long as you work on Denver time. People have worked in France, they've worked in London, they've worked whatever, but on Denver hours. And then not including Christmas week, that's another week that people can work remote. And then we have a flex policy. So if you go to NBA All-Star and you work Saturday and Sunday, then you can take 2 days of weekdays on flex in the weeks later. As an employer, I'm grateful to be able to offer that. And I still get like resentful when somebody is like off on a Tuesday. I'm like, shoot, I wish I could reach them. Like, I don't want to admit that out loud, but it's not always automatic that you're like, yeah, they're taking care of themselves. Like, I'm a human. I still get like, I wish I could connect with one of my employees, but I still try to set up structures so that they feel safe. Everybody works either an 8 to 4 or 9 to 5. You kind of pick which one of the two you want to do. Some people slack at night, but nobody's really expected to. And I don't know, we work in sports, but nobody has sports hours right now. And I'm really grateful for that. And I would love to have more impact on the industry so that teams could build structures for themselves, that we could have some sort of impact where if you're going to work 7 to 11 or 5 to 11 for a game, then you only work 2 or 3 hours during the day. And the team doesn't feel like that's, you know, hurting their business objectives.
Where did that come from? It seems like that strategy makes sense. And for somebody who spent 14 years or so working in college athletics, it is nerve-wracking to try to work 18 hours a day, to work a 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, work events, work weekends, only see, you know, your family a small amount of that time. Like, where did you come up with this strategy for the hybrid system plus the flex days plus the working on Denver time? Like, on paper, that seems like a no-brainer, but not many companies have that type of approach and strategy.
I think that it was completely iterative. Everything has evolved over time with no intention other than adjusting to market needs. When Gabby, our head of BD, was interviewing, she said, I want to work from a coffee shop once a week. And I said, there's no way that's more productive. And she said, and this is back when we were like 5 days in the office. And she's like, I will be happier if I can work one day from home per week or from a coffee shop. And I was so sucky about it. So like, pretending like I've always been some visionary with quality of life is a lie. I was really annoying to Gabby. And then I said, okay, how about every 2 weeks? What if we go with you to the coffee shop? And what if we do this? And it changed. Mm-hmm. It just evolved. And then seeing people tired after events, I was like, okay, don't come into work on Monday. And then I realized, well, maybe we need her on Monday. So what if we do something so that she can take that day later? And it happened iteratively. Like none of it was planned. It's constantly changing. I know that makes some people stress because they don't think that the goalposts are going to stay in the same place. But I'm happy to be shifting if it makes people's lives better.
I appreciate that candor because I feel like a lot of times we, you know, like to give ourselves an extra pat on the back. But like you said, things evolve. And I think one of the best parts of, you know, COVID and the pandemic is that, right? Is that it allowed entire industries to imagine a new way to work. So I appreciate your candor there saying that, you know, it wasn't always like this. It wasn't always a visionary at times because, you know, I think it is hard. And the culture is that we always want to be working. We always want to be on. It's like, and, you know, thinking about my time working in sports, it's like, if I worked a game until 10, 11, midnight, maybe, and I felt like I always had to come in 9 a.m. on the dot the next day. So I'm glad to see that it's evolving and not just within your organization. So that's awesome.
Thanks. We're all on this together. Oh my God. What is this, High School Musical? Fantastic movie.
Hey.
So to kind of take it a step further with the mental aspect of it, I think that it's a commendable that you know the challenges yourself. Like, you know, you mentioned like, mm-hmm. Oh, I probably shouldn't say this out loud. Like, no, like you should be honest with yourself about it's not perfect, but I'm going to accept that it's not perfect and I'm going to work through it and, you know, adjust accordingly, not only for you, but for your work environment and your family. Mm-hmm. What can we do as an industry to improve, not just the, you know, self-care, you know, they're almost like buzzwords now when we say self-care and work-life balance and all these things. What can we do from a mental health standpoint to make life better for not only the creatives, but the environments that we're working in?
So I think we can do a few things. One, some things I've done, some things I haven't. Things I've done, you need to make sure productivity is high because important for people to be productive in their work hours. But you need to establish non-productive time in your day so that people aren't always thinking and obsessing over productivity. The irony of the work from home movement in early COVID is some people were really productive at home. Right? Like Alana, our creative director, unbelievable work from home person. And that was great for our work output. But I love when she's in the office because of who she is as a mentor, who she is as a team builder and stuff like that. So we have something, do y'all use your companies? Do you have stand-ups at all? Karina, do you have stand-ups at Adobe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the concept of the stand-up for those that don't work in tech is it's a short meeting, like under 15 minutes, and everybody's standing up and you talk about what you worked on maybe the day before and what you're working on today. And the goal of it is you're standing up so that it's so fast and that you wouldn't get tired. And we were doing these and they were just getting like, they took too long. We were getting on tangents. It was never working. So we replaced, I don't know if y'all heard that, somebody's car outside.
Yeah,
so
you might want to rewind that a little bit.
Okay, I was just saying that guy said somebody just drove by with a really cool car. So really cool guy with a muffler. Awesome. Love him. we were doing stand-ups at Fresh Tape and Gondola, and it was just not productive. We were just like talking about our task lists and then going on tangents. It wasn't getting anywhere. So what we did is we took that time. We replaced the task of connecting what we're working on and put it in Asana. You just put what you're doing in the day. That's enough. Anybody can refer back to that or ask questions. And we took that time, and instead of giving it back to everybody as a personal 15 minutes of the day, we turned it into question of the day. So what is, somebody just says a question. Today, the question was, if you were a musical artist of any kind, what would your name be? And what like genre of music would you create? Mine was dance pop, and it was and like there were a bunch of people that said country. It was great. But that's 15 minutes. It had nothing to do with work. It just had to do with getting to know each other a little better and mixing it up. And I really am grateful for that. The other thing we think we can do as an industry, Darius, like normalize therapy. Like yesterday at a therapy appointment, 3 to 4. I love therapy. I think it's so great. I think being able to connect with somebody and go through what you're going through is really wonderful. I hope more health plans start covering therapy costs. But people should be able to admit like, oh, I'm going to therapy later. And it should be like a thing you do, like you're going to the dentist. And I think it's really helpful for people. So I would love for people to know like, hey, cool CEOs like me go to therapy. I also have a business coach. I'd like come constantly talking about the shit going on in my life. So I think that it's really great if we can start opening up about when we're going through stuff and be okay with it.
I love all of that. We could stay on this topic for forever, but I will forward the conversation and ask, what is some advice that you have for the creatives and for the entrepreneurial creatives on how to find success and move forward in this industry?
Great question. For the creatives, your output should be good and your content should be good, but you should be more focused on the relationships you build and how you treat people. People remember how you are on a set, and the growth from being the person who's just holding the camera to the one who's producing doesn't come from just your skill sets with the camera. It's how you treat people on set. So treating your network, not just as a network, as we've talked about, but as real relationships and friendships is going to really take you a long way. I'm trying to think of something else that like came to mind recently that I want to give advice to creators. Not to be so like worried about, oh, so this is my number one thing. If you are a jack of all trades and people tell you you need to specialize, unless you have a specialty that you really want to go after, don't be scared to be a jack of all trades. I think that everybody thinks that those people, like the masters of none, struggle. And I think that they are the ones that are meant for leadership because they can see different things in different ways. So when I look at a jack of all trades, I don't want them to change. I want them to keep being who they are. And then for executives and leaders, treat your people well, be good to your team, pay people fairly. My dad once said about dating, I said, Dad, I'm going on a date with a girl. I was in college. I said, should I pay for the date? Or should I split it? Right? Or should she pay? And as he said, nobody will remember if you paid for every date, but they sure will remember when you didn't. So people like financial fair, and that's like an old school mentality, but like being fair to people financially, paying people well, treating them with respect, I think is really important.
Preach.
That'll preach. This is one of the, I think this is probably going to be one of our most effective because we're covering areas that people have these questions and they talk in small circles and, you know, they complain about it on Twitter or Instagram about the different things, and you're explaining an opposite viewpoint of it without even probably intending to do so. Like you're coming on the jack of all trades to kind of give the flip side of that. It's also good to be able to specialize in things, right? You just have to, you have to accept that if I personally, like I'll throw myself out there. I am not a graphic designer at all. At all. I can do a graphic, but I am not a graphic designer. However, I have a specialty in videography, but I can do a graphic, but you're not coming to me personally for me to do it, right? And I'm okay with that. That, like you said, when you first started out, somebody could come to you and say, hey, I need a graphic done. Yes, we can do it. And you find somebody to do it. That is me 100% of the way. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I live in that and accept that. So not only should the jack of all trades be okay being in that, hey, I'm 45% graphic designer, I'm 45% videographer and 10% this or whatever the case may be. Learn as much as you're capable of learning, but at some point, you know, you have to decide, do you want to spread yourself around in those different areas? Or do you want to, you know, throw this to Justin, throw this to Karina, and still be able to, you know, do your thing.
I agree. I think the one thing that I forgot to mention for creator advice kind of goes to the jack of all trades stuff. I think my favorite creative skill set is Excel. I know that sounds crazy, or like Google Sheets, either one of those. Being able to understand financials and being able to do formulas and some things like that may not feel like they fit into your skill sets as a creative, but knowing them for the purposes of creating your own budgets, understanding client budgets and being able to review them, and just like the long-term technical skill sets that having sort of a financial understanding of spreadsheets and whatnot. I'm not saying you have to understand balance sheets, P&Ls, and cash flow statements. I'm just saying the core basics of how spreadsheet softwares work, super clutch. I couldn't recommend it more.
Yeah, I love all of this. And I think, you know, on the note of Jack or Jackies of all trade, I think one of the things that I've gotten a lot of questions from young people about that, like, well, should I focus on just more editing or should I, you know, keep shooting? And to me, I think it depends on the person. And it also depends on the place you work and the goals that you have in mind. Mm-hmm. So that's what I love about your answer, Jared, is that, you know, it's not, usually I tell people, you know, depending on if they're early in their career, I say, hey, you know, it's in your benefit to do as much as you can early on. And I say that because that was kind of my journey. I did a little bit of everything. And then as I grew and evolved, I shifted more and more to editing. And part of that was because, you know, even our team at the Warriors, we were able to specialize, right? You have your lead videographer that can also edit, but like he or she is like locking in on shooting. And I would be, you know, able to shoot and edit, but I would be locking in on editing. And I think that's such a healthy perspective because a lot of times in our industry, we get kind of stuck in like, oh, well, what should I do? And it goes back to what you said at the beginning of this conversation, like you weren't good at a lot of these things. And all of those, you know, that realization of being able to take a step back and say, there might be somebody that's better at me, has helped you in your career now. So I love all of this. And it's, I think you're a great example of all of that, of what we're talking about.
Thank you so much. I did, like, I don't want to harp on regrets and mistakes I've made because I want to grow. But one of my best friends asked me to shoot his engagement photos and because he knew I had a camera, not because I took engagement photos. I totally butchered them. I overexposed them to the point that like, they're just white. They're just, you can't see anything. I don't even know where the raws are to try to salvage it. So the only photo that worked is the one random cell phone screenshot that I think I got of the video from my phone. So we all make mistakes. It's okay. And if it wasn't for that acknowledgement, then I may still be trying to take photos for people. So I'm really grateful I don't.
I'm laughing because we have that in common because one of my guy friends asked me to shoot his engagement. It was a surprise engagement. I found out that morning that he was going to do it. And, you know, I'm kind of like an organizer, like to go to the place and space before, but we were in a big group and couldn't go ahead of time. Had a very similar situation. It was drizzling. And these are my friends. Like his now wife is like one of my best friends. And I was terrified. It was drizzling. I was so caught up in the moment. I didn't even wipe my lens. And all of this, like, it was terrible. The best photo was a cell phone photo that his other friend took. And it's just like, I feel you on the engagement photos. From that point on, I'm like, I will do posed engagement photo stuff after. I'm not doing it live in the moment. I was so embarrassed. It was terrible.
And Darius, I want to answer one other thing that you kind of mentioned before, is sort of as like a creator, or like you mentioned the creator advice and the entrepreneur advice. If anybody wants to make that jump, my favorite piece of advice is you want to build a company, right? And let's say you hired 50 people. You were blowing up. You were being used by everybody. And then you lost it all. And you had to go back to square one. Is the work you're doing in square one something you'd still love to do? And I'm so proud to say that that is. Like if I went back to square one and lost everything and it was just me in the back of my house, would I do anything different? nah, just do exactly what I did all over again. And I'm think that that's a really, like, to your point, Karina, about like when you tell people, should you edit, shoot, like, what do you love to do? Because if you have to go back to default to one of those two, and like the thing you ended up defaulting to was 3D editing because you thought you were going to make the most money doing like Cinema 4D stuff, if that's not what you love to do, focus on the other stuff, because you never know when you're going to get stuck going back to square one.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because I was going to add to that and say, just have fun with it. Like, find what brings you joy and what sparks you in this industry, because it is a lot. And, you know, in some spaces, they want someone who they can get four jobs in one and pay them what one job is worth. But do you love what you are doing? And if the answer is no, you're in the wrong place. You know, it may be the environment that you hate. It may be the manager that you dislike. But you have to find that place where you can be yourself and enjoy what you're doing. The numbers will come and go. I've done videos that have gone viral. I've done videos that have five views or five likes. It doesn't matter.
Or never saw the light of day.
Never saw the light of day.
We all have those.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this week. I was like, there are a lot of videos that I have on these 200 hard drives that I have sitting across from me that some people may not remember. Some people may have not seen. There are 200 versions of one video because somebody wanted to make a slight change. It doesn't matter. Like, get the work done. It doesn't matter how many that you're doing. It doesn't matter how many likes. Get it done the right way. Be effective and just have fun with it, because, you know, it's a much shorter time span now than it has ever been in this industry, with, you know, AI and, you know, videos pretty much editing themselves, and people thinking that, oh, I got a cell phone, I can do this. It's like, yeah, you good. I don't know.
I love that.
People have to just find what brings them joy, not necessarily happiness either, but you know, but this has been great.
Also, two things on the joy stuff. One, our industry is changing, where, especially with salary transparency, people are actually getting paid more than they ever used to in our world. So it's not just that you have to have fun and sacrifice entirely how much you make. You can make money in sports content nowadays. It's not like charity work. And then the other side of it is, like, you mentioned AI, and people are scared, right? Graphic designers are scared. Artists are scared. A lot of people are scared. How cool is it that we're bringing magic back a little bit, right? Like, prompt engineering is magical. You can say, I want to see a golden retriever with ski goggles looking down at a mouse wearing a snowboard on a snowboard, and it'll spit it out. Like, magic is back. Like, it's so cool. I think that we're so scared of what it can do to our industry that we're not recognizing that, like, content creation can be magical. It always has been, and AI is another iteration of that.
Absolutely. All right, Jared, thank you for joining us on this very important conversation. Keep doing what you're doing at Fresh Tape and Gondola, and hopefully Justin and I and Karina can get on the platform and use it for what the intentions have been for creating this. And I'm sure I can speak for the rest of the creative community that uses it. Thank you for creating a platform that puts creators first and helps them keep track of what they've done and how to improve.
Well, I'm grateful for y'all, because, you know, we may have a platform, but y'all have put your voices out there, and you've given a voice to so many people that were previously not recognized for their work. So thank you for what you do. I'm grateful to be a part of that list.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.